couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's movies I'm going to be talking about include The Missing Link, Hellboy, Little, After, and a look back at Marwyn Call. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Welcome to Marwyn. As you can see, a little bit of a connection there. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I want to hit is the Grease sequel, or prequel, rather. They already did a sequel to Grease, Grease 2, which is in a lot... It's weird. There's this contingency that love Grease 2. I don't think I've even watched the entirety of Grease 2. Even when I was like in the 80s, I got through Cool Rider, which is one of the songs. It's Michelle Pfeiffer's in it. It's kind of, that's the big claim to fame, is it kind of got Michelle Pfeiffer before she blew up. And that's the most exciting thing about Grease 2. It is so far not Grease at all. I mean, the original Grease is a lot of fun. It played into that sort of Happy Days nostalgia that was going on in the 70s. I think it was 1978 or something like that when that came out. I love Grease. I was that generation. But they're making a prequel, which is a terrible idea. And it's as if they didn't learn from Grease 2. Now, I mean, sometimes they do prequels and sometimes they do musicals that work. But that's a 40-year plus difference from when they announce the prequel. It's so digging into the past for a movie that was about the past. I mean, by the time this takes place, the original Grease would take place 60 years before this prequel is released. I mean, you might as well make a musical about the Civil War at this point. The next piece of news I want to talk about really quickly is J.J. Abrams has sounded off about The Last Jedi. You know, of course, he's directing Star Wars Episode 9, which, by the way, in the new Disney service, they're stripping the episode numbers out, and that's enraged some people. Get over it. The whole point is, you know, even though Disney owns all of Star Wars, the whole of Star Wars, because they got everything transferred in the, not just in the Star Wars Lucasfilm sale, but in the Fox sale, anything that resided with Fox is now Disney's. They can do what they want to with the numbers. And I think they're doing that so you're not counting. You know, it's sort of like if you look at the Avengers movies, you know, we got Avengers Endgame coming out, which is technically Avengers 4. But no one's calling it Avengers 4 because it's a whole series of movies. And I think that's what eventually they're trying to do, is they're trying to get away from the main counting of the lines and then diverting and having the smaller movies be a Star Wars story. I think they just want to make Star Wars whatever. And that's okay with it. But what's interesting is J.J. Abrams has essentially said that Rian Johnson, when he made The Last Jedi, deviated from kind of where he was setting things up to go at the end of The Force Awakens. And it's really kind of funny to read about this because, first of all, you got to understand, for those out there just in mainstream America, in film world, in like film journalist world, Rian Johnson is untouchable. I mean, he's like the new young Christopher Nolan. You can't criticize him, or you're a Luddite, or you're awful and you're stupid or whatever. There's a group in there, and they are heavily represented in film journalism, who like loved his movie Brick and Looper and Brothers Bloom. I've never seen the Brothers Bloom, but I never thought Brick was that great. I thought Brick was okay at best, and it was a little bit of a slag to get through. And I thought Looper was an interesting movie, but also wasn't great. There are people I know who just, he can do no wrong. He's the Chris Nolan, the young Chris Nolan. He's everything he touches is golden. And so the amount of opinion gymnastics that is going on with opinion writers about this as to not diss Rian Johnson, even though he should absolutely be dissed. He kind of made a mess of The Last Jedi, and that's a movie I don't like to watch now because I think my opinion of it's just going to go down every time I watch it, because he kind of ruins the storyline of Luke. He makes him a jerk, and he really affects the characters that you rooted for at the beginning. And I know he's trying to be a kind of classic, but don't try and be a kind of classic with this. At a certain point, you can make your own movies, and he's apparently getting his own franchise. Do whatever you want to with your new characters, but don't ruin the characters from a previous film. It's sort of like what David Fincher did with the characters in Alien 3. He kind of ruins the ending of Aliens by doing what he did at the beginning of Alien 3. I think that that's exactly what's wrong with franchise directors of the past. When they did a superhero movie, you wanted to see an authentic superhero movie based on the source material, but you got some egotistical director going, I want to give it my take and my version of it, which is exactly what Rian Johnson did, as opposed to being true to the story and to the saga that was already established. You want to do something with your own take? Do something else, but at least stick with it. And that's one of the things that Marvel has been really good at, in keeping its directors reined in, and they've lost directors like Edgar Wright for Ant-Man. So that's the problem with what Rian Johnson did with The Last Jedi. And I'll talk more about this as we come closer to the next Star Wars movie. But ultimately, retconning The Last Jedi for Episode 9 is totally okay, just as the prequels completely retconned the other films, and the special edition retconned themselves. And The Force Awakens retconned the prequels. Retconning happens, and that's how you gotta do this, and that's okay. And it's okay to not like the character of Rose. I mean, you don't have to attack Kelly Marie Tran online, but it's okay to say that's a bad character. For multiple reasons. Because she let the kids be slaves and freed the animals. Because she stopped Finn from doing exactly what the Laura Dern character did in a spaceship, yet that was honored, and what Finn did would be horrible. I mean, she's kind of a crappy character. That's nothing against Kelly Marie Tran, and it's okay to recognize that. It's okay to recognize flaws in a movie, of which The Last Jedi has plenty. And J.J. Abrams is now kind of having to mop up this mess. So that's the way the cookie crumbles when you work on a big franchise like this. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First one I want to hit is the Lion King trailer, simply because there's a little bit more to it than the original Circle of Life ad that came out several months ago. Opens on July 19th.
Everything you see exists together in a delicate balance. While others search for what they can take, a true king searches for what he can give. You must take your place in the circle of life.
I mean, it looks like a good movie, but it still has this feel of it just completely reshooting, like shot for shot, the animated film The Lion King, which I find kind of a silly effort. It's kind of academic. Yeah, the animal design and emulation is gorgeous and brilliant, but I have yet to see how this is going to be different than the animated film. You know, like how when Jon Favreau did The Jungle Book, it's very different. His version is very different than the original 60s version of The Jungle Book, and that served it well, and I think that's a good thing. I just hope that he does something a little more than just reshoot this movie. And I have yet to see that being represented in the trailers. The next one I want to hit really quickly is The Addams Family, which opens for Halloween on October 11th.
Get out!
It's hideous.
It's horrible.
It's home.
Don't forget to kick your father goodnight.
Yes, mother.
Huxley, blow F6! Fire in the hole!
I liked Raul Julia and Angelica Houston in the Addams Family movies, but doggone it, if this doesn't just give that charm of the original Charles Addams design, and I like the fact that they're using that design and playing off of what we know, but I mean, making it itself. I mean, it's been how long since the last Addams Family movie? You have time to do that. It's been what, like 30 years, 25 years. You can do a new version as an animated film, and I think it can work perfectly well. So I'm looking forward to this one. I think this one might be a hoot. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Missing Link and After.
Thank you.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Missing Link. A Sasquatch gets in touch with an infamous animal hunter in order to help him find more of his kind.
I need someone who knows the wild places of the world, and you're the world's greatest adventurer. Mama
pajama, what exactly do you ask of me?
I'm lonely. I'm the last of my kind. But on the other side of the world, they talk of this creature,
the Yeti.
I think these Yetis are my cousins. Can you take me there?
I give you my word.
Okay, what is it?
What?
Your word.
No, it's a figure of speech.
Sounds good. What is it?
Well, I'm on my way.
We have a long way to go.
This is made by the studio Laika, which I believe is in Portland, Oregon. And they are known for doing stop motion animation. Now, there's very few people who do stop motion animation anymore. Everybody goes to CGI. Now, Aardman, which does Shaun the Sheep and Wallace and Gromit, they do stop motion. And I know Tim Burton still works with stuff with stop motion. And I know that Wes Anderson does stuff with stop motion. So there is a little bit of a resurgence there because, of course, last year's Isle of Dogs, that was stop motion the way Anderson did Fantastic Mr. Fox. And we've got the Shaun the Sheep sequel coming up this year. You know, last year we had Early Man, which was stop motion. And of course, Tim Burton's always knocking something out. I know he did, well, it was quite a while ago, he did Frankenweenie, but he does the stop motion stuff every now and then. And it's nice to have that ability still there because it's so tempting to go to CGI. We'll talk about this later when I talk about Hellboy, but it's so tempting to always go to CGI because it's easier. It's quicker. It's the thing that people are trained at. But when you watch something like a movie from Laika, you know, stuff like Kubo and the Two Strings or Paranorman or Coraline or the Box Trolls, you see a level of artistry that is not represented in movies nowadays. Even Aardman, as much as I like Aardman, their stuff's kind of, part of the charm of it, it's kind of rustic. It looks like claymation. And that's okay because that's the design of Wallace and Gromit going back to the, what, 80s or 90s? Same thing with the Shaun the Sheep going back to the 90s or 2000s. It's always been that. There is a perfection that you get with the Laika designs that you don't get anywhere else. And it's a beautiful movie for that alone. This movie could have the worst acting and plot and characters in it ever, and it would still be breathtaking to watch. To the point that the animation of things, they have such detail and such fine frame by frame stuff that, you know, it supersedes the realism of CGI. Fortunately, it's also a great movie. The story's whimsical and fun. Zach Galifianakis plays the Sasquatch. You've got Hugh Jackman as the adventurer, and you've got Zoe Saldana as the woman who has the map that they all have to work with to go to Shangri-La. And it's a cute movie. It's a cute little story. And like the stuff from Laika, there's more to it than just a Saturday morning cartoon. Just as Kubo and the Two Strings was more than just a guy sailing out to try and find a suit of armor. It had a lot of depth to it with family and relationships and regret and the love of a parent to his or her child. And you get that with The Missing Link. Missing Link is a little more whimsical, but it has a lot to say about freedom and how we treat our environment and how we treat animals and how we treat other people. And it's set in such a way that can be very stylized and over the top because it takes place like around the turn of the century. So it has that stuffy British element to it with the stuffy British hunting society that wants them to not find these mythical creatures or supposedly mythical creatures in the movie. But it also has some out of the box things. You know, they're going to the Himalayas to go to Shangri-La to try and find the Yeti, which is out there. Now it's funny because, you know, they did a Smallfoot movie last year, which was a Yeti movie. They've got Abominable coming up later this year, which is another Yeti movie. I think that this is one that got caught in the pipeline where everybody was kind of developing similar ones because these things take so long and people switch studios now and then that the development kind of happens at the same time. It's sort of like how The Bug's Life and Ants came out the same year from Disney and DreamWorks. So overall, Missing Link is a lot of fun. It's got stuff in there for kids. It's got stuff in there for adults. it is not the best thing that Leica's ever done. It's hard to rate what's best that Leica's done because they're all so good. But it's not the best one. And that's okay, because it's sort of like Pixar. If you say, well, this movie's not the best Pixar movie, it's still a pretty doggone good movie. I mean, it still supersedes most animated films that are out there. It certainly supersedes movies like Wonder Park or garbage like that. It's a really fantastic little movie and worth taking your kids, and the family should enjoy it, and the adults in the crowd should like it as well. So I'm going to have to say Missing Link gets a totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about After. This is one of those movies. A good girl goes to college and meets a bad boy. And of course, it turns into a turbulent relationship.
So good. Welcome so to my good. Favorite place. We can never wanna leave. Gonna wear that dress and
my skin tight. Do my hair blue. Thought that you just wanted to be friends.
I don't think we can ever be just friends.
Nothing could ever change the way that I feel about you.
Just be careful.
What happened? Uh-oh.
It has to do with Hardy.
Something's going on, but it's not what you think.
This is a movie that it was not screened. And I've talked about movies that aren't screened. And then every now and then I'll go check out a movie on a Thursday night or early in a preview if I can go see it, even if it's not well screened. Like, actually, Shazam wasn't screened. And I think they did that because they did the preview night 2 weeks beforehand. Well, I went and I bought a ticket for that. I went and saw it because that's my job. So there's usually opportunities to see movies beforehand, even if you can't get them screened by the studio, you sometimes have an opportunity to pay to go see them. Well, this one wasn't screened by the studio, and I was not going to go pay to go see this movie because it looks like absolute poop. It's based on a book that I think was like independently published, and I have a lot of respect for that, but it's also not the first time that's happened. The Martian was a movie based on a book that was essentially self-published and then picked up because it did so well. You had the same thing happen with the 50 Shades series that was originally just published as a fan fiction, and they had to change stuff and then publish the book itself, and it became a phenomenon. But this one is a book that I don't know if it's a bestseller, but it's a certain popularity of a book. And it's one of those, it's, I guess I heard it referred to as new romance, basically as the first adult romance or first grown-up romance a character has. So this is a girl going to college and having this romance, but it looks very soap opera-ish. It starts off looking like a CW TV show, and then it kind of turns into like Vampire Diaries gone bad, only without the vampires and the cool stuff. It looks like garbage. It looks like a movie that I wouldn't want to see. I was not given the opportunity to see it. I am kind of grateful for that, because it just does not look like an appealing film. It looks like we've seen this movie about a dozen times. And even I've seen this movie about a dozen times, and I don't even like these kind of movies. So, like I said, kind of happy I didn't have to see this one, just kind of shoving it in here because I have to. It gets a preemptive suck, because that's what we do with movies they don't show me.
It sucks.
And that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Hellboy and a little. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. Hellboy. In this reboot of the Dark Horse Comics franchise, a demon who has been raised by humans helps to hunt down an ancient witch who wants to come back to life and destroy the world.
We're the line in the sand. We fight against the forces of darkness.
This is it.
We're expecting a sign that says secret headquarters.
Made me a damn weapon. I just wanted to help you become the best you.
Some dads get their kids Legos.
I thought we were supposed to be fighting monsters, not working with them.
I wouldn't say I was a huge fan of the Hellboy movies, but I certainly enjoyed them. I liked the first one, and I thought the second one was really cool as well. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Guillermo del Toro had done them. And the reason I like Guillermo del Toro so much is because he is passionate about his stuff. He loves these movies. And I feel that with even movies of his that I'm not a huge fan of or that aren't my favorite, I certainly feel like his heart is in it 100%. And I respect him like crazy as a filmmaker for that very reason. So Guillermo del Toro gets a win in my book just by how he handles himself in making these movies, because he just wants to do them like a fanboy would, not as a pretentious filmmaker does. And I thought his Hellboy movies were really good. Now, I've never read the original source material. I'm going to come out there and say that right now. So I don't know. They could have been terrible compared to the original source material, but I found them entertaining. And I thought Ron Perlman was quite literally born to play Hellboy. I mean, here's a guy who, he does not have the typical movie star look to him. But Ron Perlman has made a career out of playing unique looking people, everywhere from Beauty and the Beast on television to Hellboy. And that's one of the things when they recast it with David Harbour. I don't have a problem with David Harbour, but David Harbour, for the most part, looks normal. Ron Perlman has a real unique look, and that allowed them to do a lot of prosthetics on him, but still allow him to emote. Part of the problem with the makeup and the prosthetics they have on David Harbour is there's so much stuff on him that make his sides of his face come out that you really don't see him. Here's the problem with this Hellboy movie. Now, it's a reboot, so they're keeping it all consistent with the original films. But they're also having to kind of introduce everybody to the characters again, because it's been 11 years since there's been a Hellboy movie. And in order to do that, they have to do a whole bunch of stuff with flashbacks and reiterate already established plot points. Every time you turn around, somebody is giving a flashback to something else that happened. The movie literally starts with a flashback. So much of this movie is told in flashback that I almost question whether they needed to actually have the contemporary story at all. It's not very well written in that sense. And then in order to speed things up, they have these big action sequences. But the problem with the big action sequences is they're over-orchestrated and they're mostly CGI. And while some of it's cool to watch, I mean, there's like a scene where Hellboy is single-handedly fighting off like three giant wood trolls, but it still was all CGI. Again, it looked like they took the same technology they did to make the Lord of the Rings movies at the turn of the century and apply it to this movie in 2019. It just looks cheap. It's also R-rated. Everyone was all excited. Oh, we get an R-rated Hellboy movie. That means they're going to be swearing and violence and gore. They do gore, but it's all CGI gore. And look, I think CGI is an okay tool, but they overuse it in this movie. And to the point that it doesn't even look finished. You can see the matte lines. You can see that overly plastique look that CGI has. Last week, I talked about the Mortal Engines, which had a lot of CGI, and it was all virtual sets in a lot of it. But at least that stuff looked kind of cool because the technology had gotten to the point that they could make it look pretty photorealistic. It's just there, some of the pans looked a little odd. This movie, it just, everything looks like CGI. Everything looks like CGI. And the coherency of the story doesn't work, and you got Hellboy's brooding too much. And I don't really get behind the characters. I really, honestly, this movie was hard to follow. They kept distracting you with unnecessarily long and drawn out fight sequences, brooding Hellboy, flashbacks, trying to tell a simple story that's actually relatively simple, but it's exhausting to watch. So it just doesn't work. Kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Little. After being bullied in school, a woman becomes an aggressive boss as an adult, but has to learn to soften her ways when she mysteriously becomes a middle schooler again overnight.
Take it to boss ladies on a warpath this morning.
Every morning. I really think I could help this company if you just gave me a chance.
Just concentrate on being my assistant.
Were you always mean? I wish you were little.
Black Jesus.
How did you go from this to this?
You went to bed grown and then you woke up little.
That's for white people, because black people don't have the time.
I kind of had an interest to see this movie. I thought it looked cute. I thought the trailers looked cute. And a lot of that goes to Marseille Martin, who plays the young version of the character. She's 14 in this movie. And she's 14 in real life. And apparently, she had come up with the idea inspired by Big, the one with Tom Hanks. Obviously, little, big. It even makes sense. It's not a remake, though, and it doesn't give story credit. We've had these age swap movies before. You had 17 Again. You had 13 Going on 30. You had 18 Again. I think that was another one. Wasn't that one with Kirk Cameron or something like that in the 80s? So we've seen these movies before. It's that fish out of water. I have to deal with being a kid or an adult. Overall, it's a fine concept and it works. And, you know, Martin does a great job kind of holding the movie together as best she can. The problem, it's kind of like Hellboy, is the writing. The writing just isn't there. The script should have been left in the oven longer, because part of the thing is it comes out and it just feels like a string of gags and sketches that don't really cohesively fit together. It just kind of scatters from one idea to the next. And, oh, here's a funny scene. It almost feels like they all just sat in a room saying, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. How do we tie them together? Well, we'll loosely tie them together. It's written by the same person who did What Men Want, which I felt in some ways that suffered from this affliction as well, that it was like, oh, well, this scene would be funny, but how do we actually make that work logically within the story? Even as a comedy, the story has to logically work. And in this movie, it's almost like they don't understand how science works. Because she's supposed to be a science nerd and then grows up developing apps. I don't even know if they know how apps work. Because they're like, so we need to develop this app in 48 hours. I'm like, you can't develop an app in 48 hours. I don't even develop apps, and I'm assuming you can't do that. And they don't understand how schools work, and they don't understand how even just companies work. It just seems like it's just kind of made up and not even fact-checked for the most basic facts. The script should have been left in the oven a little bit longer, because it just did not gel, and it just didn't work. And no amount of funny acting and well thought out scenes individually could work, because it falls apart when you start asking questions and you start comparing things. I mean, there's this whole thing where she goes back to school, but then she's trying to save her company, but they're like, oh no, you have to enroll her tomorrow. Look, the movie itself has some scenes. It's one of those movies that makes a good trailer, because you can pick any of those scenes and they're going to be funny out of context. But in context, they don't work. And that becomes a problem with a movie like this, because you have to rely on a character growing and changing. And that's the dramatic cycle of a character. Even in a comedy, it has to be that way. And if you take Big, for example, Big was a story of a somewhat egocentric 13-year-old kid who then becomes an adult and has to learn how to deal with people and learn how to have a more mature relationship. And it was as much a coming-of-age story as it was a comedy. This one's not a coming-of-age story. This one's just trying to go comedy, 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 and it doesn't work that way. And at some point, you got to care about the characters and how they change. And the change happens so quickly and so absurdly at times that it just doesn't hold together as a film. And that's a shame, because I kind of wanted to like this one. But still, I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Okay. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to review Marwin Call, talk about the box office, and do the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Welcome to Marwin. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up our movie reviews with a look back at one, and that is Marwin Call. There's a reason I'm doing it. Let me play the trailer first, and then I'll explain to you why I am going back almost 10 years into the vault. After being seriously injured in an attack outside of a bar, a man develops his own therapy, which includes making models of World War II and populating it with realistic dolls based on people in his own life.
Mark Hogenkamp was in a bar, and a group of five individuals beat him senseless and did some pretty bad damage to his brain.
When the teenagers kicked my head to pieces. They wiped all memory of everything.
It's the first thing I got to work on. That's my imagination.
The movie Welcome to Marwen came out this week on DVD and Blu-ray, and I'm going to be talking about that in the Home Cinema Roundup, but I figured it was important to go back and watch Marwen Call, which I'd never seen. It was a documentary, came out about 10 years ago, and it was a what this original story was that eventually got turned into the movie Welcome to Marwen. Now, I just want to talk about this documentary first. Outside of this big studio involvement, Marwen Call was a small documentary. It was shot on video. It got a lot of buzz in the festival circuit. But the point is that it was a beloved movie that has a really interesting story. And the basic story is that there was this guy and people were giving him trouble in a bar because he had made an offhanded comment that sometimes he likes to put on women's shoes. And they took him outside and beat the holy shale out of him. I mean, he almost died. I mean, they beat him so hard that he had brain damage. He lost his memory. He lost motor functions. He had to learn how to do a lot of things. He had to go to therapy and learn how to walk again. He had to learn how to write again. He used to be an artist that could draw. But then, of course, going through this incident, he could no longer draw. And it was such severe injury that it changed him, literally changed him as a person. He had different interests and he had a different outlook on life and couldn't remember a lot of what happened to him before the incident. Well, eventually, because he wasn't a wealthy guy and he didn't have great health insurance, eventually his health insurance ran out. And one of the things that you'll find with any sort of therapy situation is they will only give you the therapy and as long as you can pay for it. As wonderful as a therapist could be, you can only go so far. And then when there's no one to pay for it, you know, it's a business. They got to cut you off. And he got cut off. And so in order to sort of give him focus and have him work on patience and details, he kind of developed his own therapy by building this little town that takes place in Belgium in World War II, which he called Marwen Call, based on Mark, Wendy, Colleen were three names he kind of put together for this, that there were people in his own life and he populated with. What he'd do is he'd find dolls that looked like people or he thought resembled people in his real life, and he made them characters and everybody had an alter ego, and this allows him to vicariously live. So it does a whole bunch of stuff. It stimulates his creativity. It gives him fine motor skills, stuff like you'd use in occupational therapy, and it also teaches him patience, and it gets him an outlet for his art. And the stories about him putting this together, and there's a real pragmatic use for it for him, and there's a lot of truth in there, and it's not done in an ironic way. And of course, eventually, a photographer discovers this and realizes that this guy's doing these great sort of basically art installments in his backyard of a trailer, and then kind of gives him a little bit of notice for this. It's a fascinating look this guy's recovery. And it's not perfect because it's real and it's human and it's what happens in the real world. But it's a fascinating documentary because it shows the frustrations that can happen with any sort of injury that results in therapy and how therapy is only good as long as you A, want to do it and agree to do it, but also as long as you can pay for it. Because if you can't pay for therapy, you got to find some sort of alternative, and this worked out very well for him. It's an interesting movie, and it's fascinating. It's a fascinating look into how the human brain does work and struggle to recover. So I'm going to have to say Marwen Call totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Of course, Shazam topped the box office last week. That was not a big surprise. And that's good. The thing that's neat about it is sometimes these movies track well and then they kind of sink. But Shazam did well. It did over $50 million, which that's not Captain Marvel territory. That's not Iron Man territory. But it's certainly respectable for Shazam, especially for the movie that only had a budget of $100 million. It's not like, the reboot of Superman, which was like $270 million, or when they did the Batman versus Superman movie, that had a huge budget, or Solo, which had almost a $300 million budget. You know, $50 million plus weekend is really good. It's going to recoup its budget pretty soon. Pet Sematary actually did pretty well, almost $25 million, for as much as it's going to drop because it got bad word of mouth. It's got like, I think, a C cinema score, and the reviews have been middling. Then Best of Enemies came in number six with under 5 million. Everything else, Dumbo dropped a good amount. It dropped 60%, but I was expecting that domestically. I think it's going to hold better overseas. Us is still doing well. It's over 150 million coming out of last weekend. This movie is going to sail over 200 million by the end of its run. And Captain Marvel is going to be doing twice that. It's probably going to be close to, if not above, 400 million by the time this weekend's over. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The spotlight this week is Welcome to Marwen. Steve Carell stars as a man with severe PTSD, anxiety, and memory loss after he's beaten in an attack.
I heard what happened to you.
Five of them jumped him. To miracle, he survived.
You taking your meds?
I got beaten within an inch of my life for no reason.
One foot in front of the other. You got it, Mark.
Embrace the pain.
But I've created a world where I can heal.
What is all of this?
Welcome to Marwen. It's my art installation.
This was supposed to be a big, I think it was supposed to be a award bait film for the people involved. I mean, it had Steve Carell, and even though he had Beautiful Boy coming out last year, this came out at Christmas. I mean, like right before Christmas, and it had Robert Zemeckis, and Robert Zemeckis, of course, had won an Academy Award winning director. It's a big tentpole release, and as we get closer to the end of the year, I was waiting for a screener of it. I never got a screener of it. If I recall, they screened it locally, but it was the same night as Aquaman. Nobody went to go see Welcome to Marwen, at least that I knew of, and it wasn't on any sort of for-your consideration slate. And I think it was just Universal said, let's not even waste the money on that. It is exactly what you'd expect when Robert Zemeckis would get his hands on something very interesting like Marwen Call. Because in Marwen Call, it's not about the dolls. Marwen Call is about the guy's recovery and how he uses the dolls to reach that recovery. This movie is all about action figure dolls, and it reduces a lot of the characters, and it overly simplifies some of the characters to make it too corny and too cheesy. And like, there's this whole side thing I mentioned in the Marwen Call review. The guy had gotten beaten up because he had said to these guys in a bar that he sometimes wore women's shoes, and he has this big women's shoe collection, and he that's something he likes to do. And later on, he talks about wanting to cross dress more, which is completely legitimate. It's okay. Who cares? I mean, that's not a big deal, but that's why he got beaten up. In this movie, the high heel shoes become a huge thing, and it's very awkward. In the documentary, it's kind of thrown in at the end where you get this information and you just realize, oh, this guy likes to cross-dress, and this kind of, and him being a little too open with that kind of led to these guys beating him up. Not that it was his fault, but it was just, that's the circumstances. But this movie uses the shoes almost as a punchline at times, and I'm thinking to myself, well, if the whole point is that this is just a predilection of this guy, why are you using it as a punchline? And using the high heel shoes as a punchline or a gag, which it does multiple times throughout the film, isn't that just as bad? Isn't that just as bad of thinking as the people who beat him up for wearing him? And then it has this weird view on mental illness where it's like he has this medication, but it's like all he has to do is just get over it. But really, that's not how medication works. And it overdoes the emotion. And like, they have this character Leslie Mann plays, who's essentially the Colleen character in Marwen Call, but they change her a bit, and she's overly perfect. And it strips out a lot of the reality, and the reality is what makes that story work because it's so imperfect. In this one, it just is just weird and creepy at times, and it's overblown, and it doesn't even understand why it's a good story. So I'm going to have to say that Welcome to Marwen, A for effort, but man, did this thing kind of suck.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Other releases this week include The Notorious Holmes and Watson, A Dog's Way Home, On the Basis of Sex, and The Amityville Murders. That's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The Curse of La Llorona and Disney Nature's Penguins. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.